Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Speaker Circle here on Rock M Radio. My name is Josh Matica. I am deputy manager over at rockmnation.com. And joining me today for his possibly, I don't know, we'll see how it shakes out, his Rock M Radio debut, I am very pleased to welcome Nate Edwards, one of our new football analysts to the show. Nate, welcome to Rock M Nation and welcome to Speaker Circle.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me, and I'm excited to be joining the writing community here.
Nate is one of a few writers that we're bringing on for this season in our football coverage. Sam and I have been working really hard to talk to a few new voices and kind of talking to people about what they've been missing about Rock M Nation's football coverage, and Nate's a really big piece of that. We're really excited to have you on board, Nathan. So Nate, usually in Speaker Circle, kind of the point of this whole podcast is for people to get to know not only the writers of Rock M Nation, but the Mizzou community as a whole. We've had people from ABC 17 on, members of the Mizzoudcast have been on before. So really, a lot of this podcast, and we'll talk a little bit of Mizzou at some point, but is to get to know you. So tell us, Nate, how did you first become a Mizzou fan? Was it from childhood? Was it an experience you had outside of Missouri? Just kind of fill us in on that.
Yeah, I was definitely born into it. My grandfather was a professor at the university. Actually, Middlebush was his creation, Middlebush Hall. He was a football referee and a basketball referee as well, which meant that my dad went to all the games growing up, which means he dragged me to all the games when I was growing up. Of course, you know, when you're three, you don't quite understand what the heck's going on. You prefer to play with your Hot Wheels, but, you know, over exposure, time after time after time, I started paying closer attention. Really started liking it during the Corby Jones years. I cried at the flea kicker game. I'll never forget that. We were walking back to the car. I was bawling my eyes out. My dad just looks at me and says, "Welcome to Mizzou fandom." And curiously enough, I was hooked at that point. I really, you know, started paying attention to the sport and really getting into it during the Brad Smith years. And then, of course, I was in college for the Chase Daniel magical run of 07. So I was born into it, and then I kind of came of age during some really great moments in program history, and it's I've been sticking with it ever since.
Yeah, so one of the things that I really enjoy talking about fandom specifically in sports is kind of the formative moments that developed you as a fan. You mentioned the flea kicker game. So oddly enough, I was born in Missouri, but I wasn't really a Missouri fan growing up. And I've mentioned this on podcasts before. None of my family had ties to Mizzou. It was more of a, hey, they're the home school, so you kind of root for them. But I mean, as a kid, I liked Michael Jordan, so I rooted for North Carolina in basketball. But as I got closer to getting into college, I was drawn to the University of Missouri for the journalism school, and I ended up, I decided early on that I was going to go there, so I became a fan. The formative moments of my career were definitely the Kansas game in 2007, Saad Reising is an image I will never be able to get out of my head. When I was in school, the Andrew Baggett missed field goal in the South Carolina comeback, that was really when I felt like I empathized with the deep doldrums of what it meant to be a Mizzou fan over the course of their history. So tell us about some of those formative moments in your life. I know you mentioned the flea kicker. What are some other ones that like just they're burned in your brain forever?
Man, you there's always a baptism by fire somewhere in Mizzou fandom. You go back to some people, a couple years older than me, and it was the fifth down. Mm-hmm. But I was, as far as formative moments go, obviously the Nebraska game was big, but the next week when they clinched a bowl game, the fans rushed the field and Brock Olivo grabbed a mic and started talking to the fans and saying how much they appreciated the support for the team finally getting there. I'll never forget that. I was in Marching Mizzou when I was in college, and one of the most just incredible moments of my entire career was that 07 Nebraska game. We always entered through the south end zone at the time, and you go up a little ramp out onto the field. And as we walked out, it was, I'm not even kidding you, shimmering gold. And the entire place was just packed. And we're talking, 40 minutes before kickoff. And you just felt the energy in the air. And, of course, that's when we smoked Nebraska the first time. The Oklahoma game of 07, the one that was when I was out of college was probably one of the better ones, was 2010 Oklahoma, when John McGaffey returned the opening kick for a touchdown. I ripped my shirt off, hugged a man who also ripped his shirt off, and we were told by security to put our garments back on. 2013, when we clinched the East against A&M. It was me and a friend of mine from college, and we'll just, you just have these moments, and luckily I've had a lot of positive ones. You go back to my father's generation, or like I said, the couple years before me, and it was just nut kick after nut kick, and you're just like, why am I even doing this? So I myself, and of course it sounds like you a little bit, had the benefit of having some seminal moments that were both positive, and of course the negative as well.
Yeah, I mean, and it extends beyond football too. I know I've been a part of our basketball coverage team here at Rock M for a while, and I mean, one of my first formative, really, when I felt like the University of Missouri, I was part of it. I was a senior in high school, and that was unfortunately the first Frank Haith basketball year and the Norfolk State game. Just a truly devastating moment for 18-year-old me. But yeah,
I took off work for that game.
Oh man,
I left early, and I was like, I can't wait to see the run start. And I just. The less said we say about that, the better off we are.
Yeah, of course. But really, like you said, we both have been the benefit of kind of seeing Missouri turn into something over the past few years that historically it never really has been. I mean, I guess you could talk about the Don Faroe years in a way, but even those, I mean, among younger fans, there's kind of not a fondness for that era. I feel like because this past like 15 years, really since the year 2000, have been so good, and we've kind of come to expect a level of performance. So you can have years like last year where you end up 8-5, borderline top 25 team, and you can be like, oh, well, it was kind of disappointing because we didn't win the bowl game, right? For a lot of people, that wasn't the reality for the most of their lives as Mizzou fans.
Oh yeah, gosh! I said, you know, when I remember celebrating winning three games at home, I thought that was awesome. And you know, you go from Bob Stoll to Woody Woodenhofer, and then Larry Smith tried to, you know, took what he did, what he could find, and turn it into something awesome. And it's been a slow turnaround seemingly since I've been paying attention, and it's been incredible to see that run. And I mean, yeah, we might be disappointed in, you know, 09 or 11 or, yeah, last year when it feels like we were close to so much more. But you really take a step back and you go, yeah, compared to where we've been or what we could be, you know, we're a solid middle of the tier team, you know. And it's like you celebrate what you can, because you know that the devastation can come quickly and without notice. But it's been a great ride, like you said, since the turn of the millennium with Pinks coming in and turning the program around. Like, it's been great, mm-hmm. and this is a good stretch. I'm not saying it's elite or the best ever, but it's been a really good stretch. And all things considered, it's been a good 20 years to be a Tiger.
Yeah, and I feel like you talk about it not being elite, it being a good stretch, but I feel like those things are all relative, right? So if we look at like the past 10 years of Alabama, that's an elite stretch. The last decade to half decade of Clemson football, that's an elite stretch. But really, for the last 20 years, like I said, of Mizzou football, it is elite in some ways, because it's like Gary Pinkel took the program to places that it had almost never been before. And I don't know, I feel like we're kind of in a holding pattern with Barry Odom, because we've seen I feel like the foundation is different now than when Gary Pinkel took over, right? Like, there wasn't that expectation. Sure. And that's been kind of nice, because now you go into year four under Barry Odom and you're like, okay, like, people are talking about like 9 to 10 wins is like, okay, this is a very distinct reality that is totally accomplishable. And that's, I mean, how many programs in the country get to actually say that?
Yeah, about 20. You know, it's, and yeah, it is relative. You know, one of the things with Pinkel that I know that frustrated a lot of people is that he raised the bar and it's like, okay, so what's next? And that's where I feel like a lot of people got frustrated. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't have the Alabama money cannon, or you don't have, you know, Clemson, you know, or Georgia or Texas or anything like that, then, you know, you can't really expect those kind of runs. You gotta overachieve where you're at, and Missouri for the past 20 years has been able to do that. So, you know, with Barry, it depends on how you view the roster that he inherited. Obviously, there are those who think that there was no talent drop off, and that going to four wins was indicative of a first year head coach at a Power Five program who was in over his head. And that he's just slowly learned over these past couple of years how to be a head coach. You also have people who subscribe to the fact that it was a drop-off in talent and a drop-off in buy-in. And, yeah, the apple was shiny, but there's a gigantic worm in the middle. Mm-hmm. And he had to root the worm out, and he had to put it all back together, and it took some time to do that. That certainly Odom buys into that theory. As we can tell from his post-game rants. But, you know, we don't really know. And what we do know is that the wins have been incrementally improving, you know, from 4 to 7 to 8. Are there things that he can still work on? Yeah, he's still a fourth-year head coach. Are there things that I still complain about from a coaching standpoint? Absolutely. Learn to use your timeouts, man. Take a couple shots at the end of half, okay? Especially when you have Drew freaking Lock. But I will tell you, I mean, overall, when it comes to coaching a football team, and I want to rip a page out of Bill C's book, being a head coach and being a staff, you have to acquire talent, you have to develop talent, and you have to deploy that talent correctly. And as far as acquisition and development goes, I'd say he's on the track to have those two boxes checked. Deployment is always kind of up in the air. You can even question, you know, Dabo or Nick Saban on some of their deployment decisions. But I think he's really rounding into form as a solid head coach. With a let's call it a 3-star program in a 5-star conference, and as long as you set your expectations and people support the team, because that's the other thing, you got to show up and give them money so they can do what they need to do. I think we are in a good direction, and yeah, this year could be huge.
Yeah, you talked about ripping a page out of Bilsey's book, which is a perfect segue into kind of what I wanted to talk about next is about you and kind of what you're going to be doing at Rock M Nation. So one of the reasons that we brought you on, I remember when you and I were initially talking about a role at Rock M, Bill came up a lot, right? Bill is kind of the godfather in a lot of ways of, and I don't want to talk about him in these like hushed tones. I mean, obviously we love Bill and we like, even though he went on to the big guy at ESPN, you know, he's kind of a legend around not just Rock M, but like the Mizzou football beat as a whole. And he's really inspired a lot of people in the way that they view the game and you in a lot of ways. So talk about a little bit what you're going to be bringing to the Rock M team and just really how you view the game and how that kind of plays into your writing.
Yeah. Just massive disclaimer. I am not Bill Connolly. I do not have any kind of degree in statistics. I am just a fan. I am a fan who was thirsty for a different look on the sport that I loved. And meeting Bill and Ross early on in Rock M's career and being exposed to their analysis and how he does it really transformed the way that I view the game. And so as the advanced statistics have developed and evolved over time, both in this sport and other sports, and you know, Bill developing his S&P and tweaking it here and there and adding things and making a more holistic view of the sport itself really, really changed the way that I thought about the sport of football. And so what I've started to do is try and keep track of the advanced stats myself. Now, certainly, I always have to kind of check my work against his if he ever runs a game. But, you know, success rates, possessions, scoring opportunities, counting sacks and yards as far as passing yards goes, third down conversions, fourth down conversions, net kicking, you know, adjusted line yards, success rates, stuff like that. It gives you such a more complete view of what a team is doing in the broad view. Because again, as he says, you know, the college football season is a 12 sample sport and you can't really do a lot with 12 samples. It's a very small sample size. So you got to rely on the big view. And when you look at advanced stats over years, you can get a pretty good idea of what the team is doing. I subscribe to that thought and I like seeing that macro view. So what I want to do is I want to bring that back to Rock M. Beyond the box score, we're bringing it back. Statistical analysis of individual players, we're bringing it back. Looking ahead for like three big factors based off of matchups, based off of S&P, we're bringing that back. And I am going to do my best impression that I can. I'm going to interpret those stats the best way I can to convey that to the Rock M readership so that they have a better idea of what they can expect from this game. And hopefully we can, I can do my best imitation, carry the torch, and bring the Rock M football analysis anyway, back to, where it used to be in the Halcyon days of the, 08 to what 14 run, that Bill C had here.
And you got a pretty decent radio voice. So hopefully doing some podcasts here and there as well. Right.
Oh yeah. We'll bring back some podcasts. I think, try and do some pregame or postgame analysis. We've got a lot of really talented writers coming in with a lot of unique experiences that I think are going to be able to really fill out the picture of what this football team is doing. And if we can provide as much both reading content and listening content for your commute to and from work, so be it. That's even better.
Yeah. And Nate, I really like the way that you talk about advanced statistics, too. So growing up, I've always been more of a baseball guy than, you know, a football guy or a basketball guy. But and admittedly, I'm not a math person. Like you said, you're not Bill. You don't have a statistics degree. Part of the reason I got into journalism was so I wouldn't have to do math anymore. But I remember when I was in school and I was bored in class, I would just start looking around on, you know, Fangraphs and Baseball Reference and discovering these kind of new ways to view the game I loved. And I was pretty blown away because I was like, man, I can't remember the last time I liked kind of breaking down and understanding numbers this much and like trying to figure out formulas and what they meant and how they informed the game I loved. And I just really like how you talked about how they open up a bigger picture. of the game. And it's not about like, oh, you know, this is the way I look at the world. It's more about like, I have a passion for this. And like that informs the way that like I'm taking in the entirety of how I can understand this game, not just kind of like, you know, the old school, well, you know, this is what the box score says and this is what this is what the stats on the back of the football card say. I like the way you talk about like a holistic approach to understanding the game through those advanced numbers, because that's how I think that's good, and I think they're for everybody, and I think they can be made accessible to everybody.
And that's my job, make it accessible. Again, I'm not a math person either. I was a social scientist myself, so you're asking me to crunch numbers. It typically does not work well, but gosh, I have thrown myself into trying to understand all of these advanced stats and what they mean and how to calculate them and how to pick that out from just watching the game. So, you know, the past year, you rewind the clock, sitting in my basement watching the game that I DVR'd. And counting snaps and counting possessions and, you know, taking into account all the things that you don't get from that box score like you were talking about. And being able to relay that to people, it gives you a bigger view, you know, instead of saying, well, you know, go back to, you know, 2010, 11, 12. Well, Yost just doesn't run the ball enough, you know. It's like, well, okay, no, but let's look at the situation, right? Where are they starting out? What are their strengths are? You know, how is he utilizing, you know, formations, and how is he utilizing play data to figure out what we need to call? What's the success rate if we just ran the dang ball off of tackle every single time? It gives you a better knowledge base to operate off of, so you have a more focused, you know, analysis essentially when you are looking at the team and trying to figure out what we are doing well or what we need to do better.
Yeah. Put you on the spot a little bit, and you may not have like a clear, distinct answer on this. What's your favorite stat that a lot of people don't think about a lot? Like, what's a stat that when you look at it, you're like, I get it. Like, I understand what's happening in the game right now. And I know that varies a little bit, but what's one that you just like love to use in your writing and in your analysis?
Points per opportunity. It is a metric that measures of all of these scoring opportunities that you got, how many points did you get out of it? And let's see here. It was Alabama Clemson 2. Yes, the second one, where Clemson and Alabama were really close, but Clemson was getting more scoring opportunities and not doing as much with them, whereas Alabama wasn't getting as many, but really capitalizing. And, you know, I sat there and I thought to myself, you know, halfway through, I was like, you know, if this keeps up, Alabama's going to outlast him. And lo and behold, they did. So it was. I love that stat in particular. It also gives you a good idea of efficiency, but mostly in the red zone. Of course, scoring opportunities when you have a first down inside the 40-yard line instead of the 20. But it gives you a better idea of execution when points are on the line. It also kind of gives you an idea of which coaches are scurred as far as going for it and how many field goals you kick, you know. So if you got 10, you know, 10 trips inside a scoring opportunity, you could walk away with, you know, 3.2 points per opportunity. You're not very efficient once you get in the 40. You're not very good at getting into the end zone. So that's something that gives you a better idea of what they need to work on and gives you a better idea of what to be mad about. So that's a good one. And of course, you know, again, go back to the Texas Bowl starting field position when Michael freaking Dixon just punted us to hell and we started, our average field position was like the 12 and Texas was the 23, and eventually they just were able to lean on us a little more and outlast us during that game. And you know, you could look at the box score and you could see the rushing yards were about the same. The passing yards were okay. It was like, what was the difference? Well, we had about 80 more yards that we had to go, but then Texas did, and they just outlasted us. So those are the types of stats that I really like to look at to get a better picture.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. that's good. It'll give a give readers a kind of a preview of what you'll be writing about whenever you're on the site. So we already talked a little bit about Barry Odom and kind of your thoughts on him. But to transition, it's kind of the last part of this almost introduction podcast for you. I want to talk a little bit about the team and about the coming season. So we're still a few weeks out from football actually officially starting, although the players are in preseason camp now. I mean, there's not much to say that hasn't already be said, that hasn't already been said, even on our own site, right? Like, big expectations. Odom has proven that he can take this team on long runs in November and late in the year, take him to bowl games 2 years in a row. But now, like, things are ratcheted up, right? You got preseason All-Americans, you got the highest rated transfer quarterback on the market, and you got another high rated transfer quarterback in kind of waiting in the wings. Like, this feels like a foundational year in the sense that almost I think there are expectations that Odom is to kind of follow in Pingle's footsteps and take Mizzou kind of to that next level. And I don't know how fair those are. I think we'll find out a lot about Odom and about the program that he's going to run after this season. But what are some of your general overall thoughts about the program heading into Barry Odom's fourth year?
I am optimistic, but skeptical.
you say that in a very cautious tone.
Yeah, optimistic, but skeptical. I have been, wearing the rose-tinted glasses and been upset before. Until he can prove it, I have no faith in an Odom-led team to do well in the first quarter of the year. And what do we start with? We start with Wyoming in Laramie. And, again, small sample sport, but he is open with a loss to West Virginia, a shootout to Missouri State, and then, obviously, a pantsing of an FCS opponent the next year, which you're supposed to do the year before. No offense to UT Martin and Missouri State, but that's what they're supposed to do. Obviously, last September was better than the two Septembers before that, but we've never opened on the road. and Wyoming is annoying. They play defense really well. Offensively, they're returning some pieces, but it was not very impressive. You know, they're forecasted to be 107th in offense and 68th on defense. Obviously, we're projected to be much, much higher than that. But it's September. It's when, Kelly Bryant will get his first start there. It's on the road. And I'm just, until we win it, we haven't won it. And so I'm just going to hold my breath and hope for the best in that first game.
Yeah, the Wyoming game definitely feels like, and without getting too much into the numbers, because spoiler alert, I haven't. It kind of feels like one of those games that we've seen a lot over the past few years with the Drew Lock era almost, where you don't have as much confidence in the Missouri defense. Well, like, they have pieces, and that's the frustrating thing, is we know they have pieces. We know that there is talent on that side of the ball, right? But it almost feels like are they going to break this game? And how many points will be able to put on the board? It just feels like if we can get out ahead far enough, then they'll just be chasing us the rest of the game. And part of me wonders whether that's just our default mode right now, because that's how all of the Drew Lock years were, or if maybe it's kind of like you said, until they do it, we're not going to be able to confidently kind of assert that Mizzou will be able to win a game handedly on both sides of the ball, right? Against an obviously inferior opponent. But on the road, it certainly feels like, at least for a few quarters, unless they can get off to a big lead, we're going to be kind of clenching our you-know-whats and hoping that Missouri won't have to play one of those games in a shootout style.
Right. I mean, you go back last year, we won 40-13. Mm-hmm. Well, how did we do it? Okay, now I know Drew Lock threw for 4 touchdowns, but it was 3-0 at the end of the first. It was 10-0 halfway through the second. It was 13-0 at half. And, I'm certainly not trying to be a doomsayer, but we just did not look very good. And that was, second game at home with a senior quarterback. Certainly I'm not saying, 1 year leads to another, but we really beat him once Drew Lock started keeping on those options. And I think he got nearly 100 yards against him. And once we started doing that really opened everything up. for Crockett and Roundtree, which opened up Johnson in the middle. I think Albert O caught a touchdown. Like, it opened up, but not until we got that run game going. Now, you look at Kelly Bryant and look at Larry Roundtree's back, Tyler Beatty, you go, okay, well, we got the pieces here for a good run game. We are replacing two linemen. That's never easy. It's always kind of a crapshoot. And if they could bottle up our passing game, you know, in that first half, with Drew Locke and a solid offensive line and, you know, Emmanuel Hall and everybody like that, what are they going to do when we're trying to break in new pieces too? You know, and again, they got to do the same thing as we do, but it's just a little red flag that I can't help but pay attention to. And you can't win them all until you win the first one. And I know there's a lot of expectation for these guys to do well. And I just want them to be focused, take care of business, give me a 21-0 lead at half. Let me feel good about this, and then we'll move on. But that's going to be a huge tone setter for this season. And if we squeak by or, God forbid, lose, there goes the season.
In a sense, for sure. So I want to kind of put you on the spot based on something that you were talking about. And I'm certainly not claiming that you're saying this, but, you know, we got to get the headlines and got to draw on the viewers, sure, and the listeners. You know, you talked a little bit about Drew Locke kind of finding his footing in that Wyoming game and possibly how the addition of Kelly Bryant could make things different. Obviously, Drew Locke he's a legend at Mizzou. He had the charisma, he had the big sexy arm, you know, he was everything you wanted out of an SEC quarterback. He kind of defined almost like Mizzou's new success in the SEC, kind of like those outside of those first few years, this new era that they're going into. Really, I think we'll look back and in a way he's almost defining in Barry Odom's first few years, kind of getting his feet wet. We'll always have known him as like, oh, he had an NFL quarterback with him. But coming into this new year with Kelly Bryant, hopefully a little bit more of a balanced offense, do you think that leads to less games like that where you're leaning so much on your quarterback to get things done because we know Kelly Bryant probably isn't as prolific as Drew Locke is, so you kind of have to rely on the guys around you? And to be fair, the supporting cast is pretty good. Do you think that bodes well for the future of Mizzou's offense?
I do. I don't know. I haven't really gotten a good feel of what the group consensus of Kelly Bryant is. I've heard, you know, oh, it's going to be no drop off from Drew to Kelly. I've heard, oh, it's going to be so much different. You got to, you know, pump the brakes. It's not what you're going to think it's going to be. I think we can all agree he's a very talented athlete. You don't make your way as starting quarterback of Clemson without being that. What I would say is that I feel like if Kelly Bryant had 4 years at Missouri, we'd view him very similarly as to what we viewed James Franklin, whereas it's a highly rated quarterback who comes in, doesn't like flash anything that's super impressive from like an arm standpoint. Obviously, James Franklin had the run against A&M, a couple of key moments against Oklahoma. Like, you had some of that, like, just as he was running, but never like through the air. And I think if Kelly Bryant was a 4-year starter here, we'd be very tired of him. He's super efficient on his passing, but he doesn't go very far. You know, his 1 year at Clemson with Clemson athletes, you know, he threw for like 2,800 yards, 65% completion rating, but only 13 touchdowns. And really, even on the ground, it was only 854 yards. So I think, you know, if you mold a system around him, it's a little bit more patient, it's a little bit more deliberate. But yes, kind of like what you're alluding to, it puts you in a position where you are controlling the game a little bit more. And I'm not saying we have Clemson's defense, because no one has Clemson's defense, but it certainly puts that side of the ball in better positions. You know, against Missouri State in 2017, against Wyoming in 2018, you know, you had a situation where it was just kind of like, Missouri State, we couldn't stop anybody through the pass. And with Wyoming, we just couldn't get anything going. If you're a little bit more deliberate, a little bit more safe, I don't think we're going to be impressed like with the arm or like big circus catches, but I do think we're going to be very pleased with the ability to convert third downs. Something that when Franklin, his senior year in 2013, was very, very good at doing, and Matty Mock wasn't, it never really became, But it's kind of like, it's the non-sexy, like, just get it done type of offense that I think we're going to see. And I think that could bode very well for this team.
Yeah, the pacing of the Missouri offense should be different in a way. You talked about the Missouri State game where it was just like, it felt like every five plays there were at least three touchdowns, and it was just this wild swing between agony and ecstasy. Drew Lock hitting for 80-yard touchdowns, and then all of a sudden Missouri State pops one off too. I can't help but feel like that's got to be good for Missouri's defense. I mean, one of the things that plagued them so much last year was their inability to stop the pass. But I think everybody agreed that that's just as much of a symptom of a bad pass rush as it is a secondary.
Yes,
we look at the secondary, you've got guys like DeMarcus Acy and Christian Holmes who on talent alone are, I mean, I don't feel like I'm hyperbolizing, but all SEC caliber guys. Maybe they don't reach their full potential, but they've certainly got the talent and the athleticism for it. But when you've got young guys on the line that don't know how to pressure the quarterback, I mean, even David Blau is going to have a career day against you, you know?
David Blau.
I'm glad we're never going to have moments looking back at like David Blau, like Connor Shaw. Like, you know just kind of like tense up when you hear Connor Shaw's name? Like, David Blau, you can kind of like sigh a little bit, but it's never going to be quite on that level.
Yeah, it's like, David Blau, Connor Shaw was made out of tetanus. I don't even know if that guy's still playing or not, but even if he was, he would still be tremendous. I don't want to give away all my content because I got to hit my story cap.
I mean, that's
week,
fair, dude.
But I will say this. If you want an expectation for this team, I think it's going to be very much more like 2010 than 2013. And if you remember that 10 team, the defense was unheralded, but it had a lot of stars who were rounding into form. Dominique Hamilton. We had two corners in Carl Geddes and Kevin Rutland who ended up awesome, but without like any, you know, accolades at all. Just very unheralded, but four-year experienced seniors who ended up being very good shutdown cornerbacks. You also had an offense with a tremendous quarterback in Blaine Gabbert, who really only was utilized as more of a checkdown machine. You had Michael Agnew, you had TJ Moe, because on the outside you had Gerald Jackson and Wes Kemp, not known to be burners. So it was a lot of just like matriculate down the field, bust a big play out of a couple of short passes, but really ride the run game. And I think that's more realistic of what this team could be. And I'll provide a lot of statistical analysis to prove that. That's kind of how I'm viewing this, what this team could be. And of course that means that they're going to, you know, throw it out the window, go five wide and go Washington State and just pass all the time. I don't know, but that, going into the season, that's kind of what I'm expecting.
You know, I think if you told people at the beginning of the year, hey, Mizzou is going to go 10-3, I think most people would take that. As long as it doesn't end with a can of corn interception to Iowa in the Insight Bowl. I think I was on a cruise when I was watching that game, and it, like the reception was really bad and the TV was really fuzzy, and I remember watching Gabbert roll. And as soon as he threw it up in the air, I just threw my arms up. I was like, I could see that safety sitting there before he even came onto the frame. I was just like, I know he's
Micah
there.
Micah Hyde. I have a friend of mine who went to Iowa who I was watching it with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was he hated Micah Hyde. He thought he was the slowest dude on the team. And when he made that pick, I was like, oh my God.
You didn't.
And what people forget, though, is that we still almost won that game.
Mm-hmm.
We were a TJ Moe catch on fourth down that was caught, mind you, away from continuing that drive and possibly tying it up. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
I mean, I don't want to insult Micah Hyde too much, but you don't need to be fast or really even mobile to catch that ball. So
just be there. Yeah,
you just got to be in the right place at the right time. Well, Nate, that's all I had to go through. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we signed off here?
I'm really excited to be part of the team. I'm excited to crank out some content for you guys. I think it has the potential to be a really good year. And I'm really excited with what Rock'em is doing to kind of overhaul their football coverage. We got a lot of good things coming down the pipe for you guys. Hope you all read. Hope you all listen. Because we could be going on a very magical journey together.
Yeah, for sure. And make sure, and you've kind of switched back and forth, but man, you're part of the team now. You can say we. You have to rock M their coverage. You're part of it, man. Our coverage now. But yeah, thank you so much, Nate. Is there anywhere that people can find you online to find any more of your writing or any more of your thoughts on social media, or are you just going to be on Rock M?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'll be on Rock M. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Nate G. Edwards. Obviously, my content is going to be a lot more original and creative than that, but it's very easy to find me. You can, you know, just see all my random musings of college football and Mario Kart 64 and my stupid dog. So yeah, just tune in and we'll join this. We'll enjoy social media during college football falls together.
All right. Well, Nate, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Obviously, like you said, you can find him on Twitter and his writing will be up on Rock M Nation this fall. Not to add on too much because he said it really well, but man, me and Sam are really excited about the football coverage we've got going for y'all this year. Like Nate said, it should be a pretty fun year. Hopefully the expectations record-wise are what we want them to be, but even if they aren't, we're going to have a lot of fun breaking down football and looking at it from all these different perspectives. Nate, thank you so much for joining me. Obviously, you can find Rock M Radio on Apple and Spotify and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next time. We'll